hold hands and close your eyes. It's 12:30, and you're listening to the Ghost Story Guys.
Welcome to the Ghost Story Guys. I'm Brennan Storr.
I'm Ian Gibbs.
And this is a show where we talk about spooks, specters, and all the other things watching us from the shadows beyond the campfire. Some conversations only make sense after the sun has set, and this is most definitely one. Thanks for tuning in. This is episode number 76, and we're coming to you from that tiny mountain cabin you dream about but can never quite reach. How you doing, Ian?
Oh, I'm still here, Brennan. How about you?
Oh, God, I am still here. I am still here just about.
Right.
Still here. Well, I am excited for our first episode of 2020.
Yes.
For our first 2020 episode of Listener Stories.
You can never go wrong with Listener Stories.
No, never.
You really can't.
So many good ones. And I think we'll probably have another episode of Listener Stories coming up.
Oh, nice.
Because we just have so many and they're so good and people keep sending them, which I love.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited. But I guess before we get there, we should probably address the is it an elephant in the room? Is it the Joan Rivers in the room? The fact that both of us sound like absolute shit.
We've been two-pack-a-day smokers for the last 50 years.
Holy crap. Wow.
Yeah, I did actually say to a friend of mine last week, I said, I can't remember ever being this ill.
Yeah, I have been this sick, but not for a very long time.
Yeah.
That said, I'm on the far side of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, me too. Coming on the other side of it.
Yeah,
now.
and we as we were saying before we hit record, hearing about someone else's medical problems is like hearing about someone else's gym workout.
Unless you fell on the treadmill and landed on your face, I don't care.
Yeah. So yeah. we'll spare you the blow by blow. I imagine it'll probably come up at some point on a cabin fever.
Yeah.
But suffice it to say, I have been sick for a week.
Yeah.
And we had planned to launch a bunch of new stuff.
Oh, we were going to do all kinds of stuff.
And that's not going to happen. That's probably going to have to wait till the next episode. But we're still going to have a ton of fun.
Absolutely.
And I have my own little story to tell.
Ooh.
Yes. Yeah, so what happened was, you'll of course, and people loved the story on episode 75 when I talked about the finding out that there was a gentleman slumbering not far from my bedroom window in the darkness. Yeah.
Yep.
I'm glad everyone had such a...
Urban adventures. I'm
glad everyone had such a great time with that.
Gotta love living in the inner city.
Well, inner city. I mean,
it's Victoria. This is as close as we're going to get to inner city.
The Victoria version. I think that's Pandora still.
Yeah, true.
But anyways, so there was a gentleman living outside my window. He was moved on and they cut back the bushes and things like this, so fine. Well, on December 23rd, I was taking out my wife and I were taking out the cardboard recycling. And I open up the lid of the right side of the bin. Of course, it's one of those big, sort of rectangular steel bins.
Yeah.
So I open up the lid, prop it open. You don't even think about it, right?
No.
And I go dump a load of cardboard in there, and I realize I'm dumping it on a dude.
Oh, no.
Who has kind of set up his little cardboard cave that he's just chilling in.
like a little mouse.
Yeah. And I went, oh, shit. Sorry, man. I didn't think to look for you there. And this guy said, oh, that's fine. Don't worry about it. I thought, oh, okay. Well, I tell you what. I'm going to go to the other side to dump the rest of this.
You're still like, I still got stuff to get rid of. So.
The world keeps turning, baby. The world keeps turning. And Nick looked at me and was like, what's going on? I said, oh, there's just a man sleeping in there. Oh, yes. We're not going to act like this is a problem.
No, or in any way unusual.
Unusual.
No.
And really, in our neighborhood, it's not.
No, that's true.
So anyways, I finished dumping the cardboard. Really, I think it helped insulate his feet.
You're a giver. I mean,
truly.
That's the way it is.
And so anyways, I said goodbye and I shut him back in. and then honestly, it was 2 days before Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, it had been raining quite a bit.
So you opened it again and threw in a cup of hot chocolate.
It was a coffee, but yeah.
Yeah. Splattered everywhere. Briefly, he was warmer.
we went and made him a coffee, pulled some sweets out of the cupboard and took it. But of course, I didn't want to attract attention.
No.
Because.
And don't feed them. He'll never leave you alone. Like, he'll be curled up in your broom closet there and you'll be like, what? How did you get in here?
Honestly, I think we're actually doing pretty well because he was outside the window.
True.
Now he's migrated to the back of the building.
True. Well, now he has his own building, so that's kind of nice.
He's upwardly mobile.
Yeah. I like it. He really
owns more space than I do.
He's really stepped up.
Jesus Christ. Anyways, Yeah, so I brought him some stuff. He was very, very generous, or not very generous. He was very, very appreciative. And that was pretty much the end of it. But I said to my wife, I said, well, I tell you, as soon as someone other than us finds him, he is gone.
And, well, he's going to scare somebody.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, not on purpose, but someone's going to throw something in there, look in, and get the crap scared of them, and that'll be it.
And I that's actually what happened. I heard, I was at home the other day, and I heard that, well, I've been home the last week.
Yeah.
But I overheard the landlord talking to someone about how she nearly, shall we say, had the big clutcher.
Oh, no. It was the landlady.
Yeah, when she went to go toss something in there.
Oh, no.
I will say, though, I love how she – and, I mean, she's right – sort of. But I love how she frames her having him evicted by the police as a matter of, like, she's doing him a favor.
Well, okay.
Because what if he catches himself on fire? Which could happen.
I suppose. But there was recently, like, and I recently, I mean the last 2 months, a man who was killed because they came to pick up the refuse.
Oh.
He slept through the pickup.
Right.
And the truck crushed him.
Okay,
so
well.
It is not a safe thing. And no. And to be fair, I mean, honestly, if this guy needed a place to go, we do have some pretty great shelters.
That's true.
Here.
That's true.
Like, yeah. I actually am kind of impressed by the way Victoria stepped up around homelessness. So
fair.
There's always more to do. I get it. But
sure.
There are definitely other opportunities, shall we say.
Well, fair enough. I mean, at least this way he's a true crime podcast problem, not a ghost podcast problem.
Exactly. So much better place to be.
So that was just my very low energy adventures over the last couple weeks. Yeah. I will say one thing that we are going to announce in this show that is new for this year, and I'm really excited about it, is our new musical partnership. We are going to be partnering with Kevin Eustace, host of the podcast We Need to Talk About Ghosts. And incredible musician.
Yeah, he is a talented dude.
Yes.
Like, annoyingly talented.
Oh, no, it's ridiculous. It really is. Kevin, if you're listening, you son of a bitch. Kevin, of course, was a guest of ours on The Lady Vanishes, episode 72, I believe that was. Mm-hmm. And he will be coming back, along with, we will have one or two other guests as well. We're very excited about that over the course of this year. But with Kevin, not only is he going to be, you know, joining us maybe every few months or something if we can schedule it, but Kevin is going to be writing interstitial music for us. And we are so, so excited about that.
Yeah, big time.
We kind of mentioned it off the cuff to him, you know. It's just because we were sort of advised by a lawyer that we needed to scale back on things like musical guests for various reasons. Which is not to say we won't ever do it again.
Right.
It's just, it's kind of a... arranging, it's kind of a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
You know, of course, we have PodSafe Music that we subscribe to, but I just love being part of a community, and I love Kevin's music.
Mm-hmm.
And so we approached Kevin, and we said, hey, man, would you be interested? And he was. And the first piece he's delivered, you will hear on this show, it's called Almost Midnight, and it is a brilliant, brilliant piece of music. And so we may not have new music from Kev on every show upcoming. I don't want to put that kind of pressure on
him. Well, he does have a job.
Yeah, and another podcast, yeah. Apparently. But at the same time, we will be having stuff like this from him throughout the year, and we're so excited to bring it to you. So, coming up after the break, our first volume of listener stories for 2020. Welcome back. Well, that's a little better. A little better. Oh, man. This sounds awful. I am so sorry, listeners. You have my sympathies. If you make it through this whole thing, man, gold star.
Listening gold to star. Your voice sound like it's been through a cheese grater?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a hard time with it. I had to have a phone conversation today with a guy, and it's a secure call. And, you know, the first time he heard my voice, he was kind of like, yeah. Who's this really? No, it's Brennan. It's Brennan.
No, right? It really is.
I just sound like I'm a casino pit boss. It's a long story. I got punched in the throat. So, as I said before the break, on this episode, we're going to have our first listener stories collection of 2020. And thank you to everyone who sends in stories. Mm-hmm. We love hearing your experiences.
We do.
And what we really love hearing, too, is when you hear a story on the show that connects to something you've experienced.
Yes.
Because that helps other folks. You know, as I'm sure a lot of you know, these stories really can be alienating. You know, I sometimes people will say that you've made a story up for attention. And I don't know who ever gets good attention from a ghost story. You know, I mean, sometimes you get a good story at a party, but going around saying you saw a headless man drift across your living room is not a good way to pick up chicks.
No.
Take it from me.
No. Well, not only that, but I mean, if you're in a family where, you know, either you're the only one who saw it or nobody else wants to believe it, it is very isolating. And it's funny because people will send in their stories and say things like, I've never told anybody this before, or you're the only people to hear this outside my family.
Dear Penthouse, I never thought it would happen to me.
I never thought it would happen to me. But the other side of it is when we do these listener stories and people email in and say, oh my gosh, that happened to me. I'm not crazy. So these stories just do so many good things in so many different ways.
Yeah. And the first story we're going to be sharing tonight is actually something that came about because of things we talked about on the show. Her name is Jessica. And the story we told or the things we talked about connected with experiences of hers.
Very cool.
So I guess we will start there.
Awesome. My name's Jessica, and I've been listening to your podcast since Shannon at Into the Fray mentioned you guys. I think it was the Las Vegas Museum episode. I love listening to each and every one of your episodes. Two things from your podcast have stuck in my mind. One is how you describe certain nights where you either don't want to venture outside, or if you do, you don't want to be out for long, and everything is darker than normal. I have a farm in North Carolina, and I've felt that feeling on certain nights. I know that farm well, and have repeatedly gone out into the pastures without a single light or any moonshine to retrieve a horse that is essentially playing hooky from coming in. I've had horses run from or get spooked from a flashlight, so going out in the dark is just easier. Other times, I've stood at the gate and called to them and they come thundering out of the darkness, a wonderful sound and experience. But on some nights, I've left the safety of the barn and hesitated at the edge of the light, afraid and listening for something. What? I have no idea. When I do muster the courage up to walk into the dark, I'm quiet and I'm careful. I make sure the gate doesn't rattle and the chains don't clank. The horses either are already at the fence or they walk up quietly, ears perked up and aware, but not skittish. One, either the lead mare or the lead gelding, often stands looking out into the dark and will not come in until I've gotten everyone else inside, which is very odd, especially when food is promised in the barn or if you know how herd hierarchy usually works. I'll speak quietly to them in hushed tones, not wanting to draw attention to whatever is out there. The horses are exceedingly cooperative on these nights, not pulling at the leads or being difficult with their halters. Once inside, they don't bang their buckets or kick stall walls signifying how much they want their food. They wait quietly. They eat quietly. I personally don't feel safe until I'm back in my car or in my house. Nights like these are always darker, as you said. It almost feels tangible. I feel small, and while not quite hunted, I get the idea that if I draw too much attention to myself, it's my own fault for what may come to investigate. It reminds me of the concept of the wild hunt, because something bigger is definitely out there, going about its own business, and I never want to run into it. The second story relates to the one you mentioned in episode 71, where the ghost girl in white is surprised at being seen. I've had a similar experience. As a preface, I'll state that the house was built by my parents in the 80s, and we were the only occupants until 2014. In the early 2010s, I was in my 20s and living with my mom. She was going through a very nasty divorce, and I did not trust my dad not to do something. At around 3:15 a.m., I was asleep in my bed when I just woke up. It was that semi-abrupt waking when your mind clicks to consciousness at the same time your eyes open. I was on my left-hand side, facing towards my door, and I noticed a softish green light illuminating that side of my room. I didn't think much of it, as my laptop's charge light was green, and I know that I had laid it on the floor by my bed before going to sleep. However, the green light was brighter than usual. Normally, the tiny LED glow barely projected itself past 3 or 4 feet, but this light easily illuminated the far wall. It also illuminated the woman standing at the corner of the bed near my feet. She was tall and fair-skinned, with dark hair neatly piled on her head like a Gibson girl style. Her clothing was equally period, with a full-sleeved blouse and a high-waisted black skirt. She held what appeared to be a metal clipboard in her hands, one of those storage clipboards where you can store papers inside, poised as if taking notes. And the look on her face was one I describe as being pleased or satisfied with the progress being observed, her lips slightly upturned. My first thought was, there's a person in my room. Not a ghost, not a spirit, but a person. She was solid. My eyes widened in fear at the thought of someone having gotten into the house. When they made contact and her upturned lips broadened into a smile, her smile seemed to say, oh, so you can see me. She then started walking towards me up alongside the bed. At that point, I screamed because there was a person in my room that was now coming towards me. I turned my back on this woman, still screaming, because I decided to turn my bedside light, as if that would do anything to stop the intruder, which is on the other side of my bed. I fumbled with the switch, all the while convinced that I was going to feel her grab my shoulder or put a hand over my mouth and try to shut me up. The light goes on. I turn back around, and no one is there. 3 seconds later, my mom opened the door to my room, having woken up after hearing me scream. I explained that there was a woman in my room, and she turned on all the lights in order to search the whole house, while I made sure that this woman hadn't somehow hid under my bed. We found nothing. Now, of course, I could have attributed all this to a waking dream, save for one thing. Once the house was checked, and my heart rate went back to normal, my mom asked me something odd. Did you close your door before going to bed? I said no. My mom had opened the door to my room when she heard me scream. I specifically remember her doing that. Literally turned the handle and pushed it open since it had been fully shut. Thinking back on where this woman had stood, there was no blackness of an open doorway behind her, but instead there was the distinct white rectangle of a closed door. And before you ask, no, I would not have mistaken my closet door for the entry door for my room. While they share the same wall, my closet has double doors, and they were firmly shut. Thinking back on the event, I'm not sure if I came up with the thought of, oh, so you can see me, or if it was directed to me non-verbally from this woman. But that phrase, thought, whatever, was emphasized, and I think she liked the discovery that I could see her. I haven't seen her since that incident, but I do think of her often.
Thank you for sharing that with us, Jessica. That's a fantastic story.
Mm-hmm.
A couple stories. And it's really nice to hear someone else who's noticed, or rather hear from someone else who's noticed that dark, dark.
Well, and not just her, but the horses too.
Oh, yeah. And the fact that they're so docile on those nights.
Yeah, that is really interesting.
Like, even they know better than to be out there. No, I've had a few, well, I mean, obviously not the last week, but since our last recording, I've definitely had the odd night where you get out past a certain point and you start thinking, I don't know, it's hard to explain, but certain areas start feeling like they're off limits.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, a great example of this, something just popped into my head, is when I was in Los Angeles showing Ella, our listener Ella, around downtown. And it was about 8 o'clock in downtown LA. And the later it got, the less room you had to walk around.
Interesting.
It wasn't that the streets got busier. It
No.
was that as the sunlight faded,
the energy changed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like perceptibly changed.
Interesting.
And there were just more and more places you could no longer go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Thank you very much for sharing that with us,
Jeff. Sure.
Yeah. This story comes from Chris. My first story happened when I was roughly 15. So maybe in 2002 or 2003. We lived in a townhouse in the low-income area of Renfrew, Ontario, and my room was in the basement. For the first few weeks I slept down there, I struggled to sleep due to the furnace noise. After a while, I got so used to it, I actually found it easier to sleep once it came on, and it was a sweet lullaby that helped me fall asleep. My mom, who had horrible taste in men, started dating a man named Bob, who I instantly did not like. They had been going out for a short while before these events happened. I was sleeping in my basement one night and suddenly awoke because I had to pee. I pulled my blanket down and started to sit up when I glanced in the direction of the basement stairs and saw a figure. Now this room was pitch black all the time at night, so I shouldn't have been able to see anything, but there it was. I felt like it was looking right at me. I also felt like I recognized the figure, which resembled Bob. Size, shape, everything. I spoke, saying, "Bob," in my groggy, sleepy voice. Suddenly it started moving toward me. Not like steps, but just floating, for like maybe a second or two. Then, just before it reached me, it disappeared. While it was coming toward me, it didn't feel like it had good intentions. I was instantly creeped the hell out and did the cowardly thing. I lay back down covering my head with a blanket and went back to sleep after a while. Peeing didn't seem as important anymore. When I awoke the next morning, I remembered the whole thing very well. I chalked it up to maybe still being partly asleep or having my eyes adjusting to the dark. As time went on, though, it turned out Bob was a very bad dude. He ended up stealing my mom's car and taking off with a 16-year-old girl. The car was found partly submerged in a nearby river, and Bob was found, arrested, and charged for multiple crimes. Now looking back, I can't help but wonder if that figure in the basement was some kind of warning about Bob. My second story happened in February 2019. My friends left for a Florida vacation and had me watch their place for a week along with their little cute white dog. I stayed there almost as my own little vacation home. One of the nights, I woke up to a bark from the dog, which was on the bed with me. I was startled because I wasn't used to waking up in that manner, and looked toward the dog, then at the foot of the bed where he had been facing. I saw what looked to be three shadow figures. They seemed between average or maybe slightly above average height and average build in every way. My heart sank and went into overdrive all at the same time, and I literally said, "What the fuck?" out loud. Once I had spoken, they seemed to kind of lean over and reach for me. My fight or flight instinct kicked in. Being a heavy-set guy, I have never been a runner. I hear ya. So I instantly started kicking my feet and rolled quick off the bed, ready to throw down, as if I'd know how to fight three people, let alone a spirit or a ghost. They disappeared once I was on my feet, though. I walked to the wall and turned on the light. There was nothing in the room except myself and the dog. I don't know if the dog barking woke me out of some kind of dream, and my body was still half awake and half asleep, or what, but that's how I rationalize it so I can sleep soundly, in possible denial. So thanks for sending those in, Chris. It's always kind of fascinating when you see sort of the doppelganger thing.
Yeah.
You know, like in the case of seeing something that looked like Bob. And I don't know what it is, because usually it's bad enough having one son of a bitch. You don't need two. I'd be like if I had to see your doppelganger running around somewhere.
You'd be lucky.
I mean, if I could hit him on the first hit, yeah. So, yeah, thanks again for sharing those, Chris.
Our next story comes to us from George. I'm a critical care RN working the ICU at a hospital in the USA and would like to share some things with you. First, let me say that nurses are a superstitious bunch. Everything from not wanting to work on a full moon to never mentioning the word quiet, to the fact that our 24-bed unit has rooms 1 through 25 because there is no room 13. We've all had our share of unexplainable experiences working in the unit, and here are a few of mine. Room 23 has had repeated patients claiming someone was under their bed grabbing at their feet, and almost every nurse in our unit has experienced this as well. Our tech and I were turning a patient on their side while changing their sheets. The patient started to have some difficulty breathing, and all of a sudden, from behind me, I heard a loud hissing noise start, causing the tech and I to pause and stare at each other, confused for a moment. The oxygen supply on the wall had turned on by itself. Neither of us could have done it. The supply is a turn knob to control how much oxygen is released, and it was turned up to 4 liters. That is not something a bump would do. It would take a couple of full turns to do that. The tech then went and got the patient a nasal cannula, although they did not require one before this. We agreed that the patient probably needed it. I've had a sink in the unit turn off and on 3 times while I was in the room. There could be some explanation to this, I guess, but it was too rhythmic and perfect. The most dramatic experience I had was while one corner of our unit was closed. The unit has four corners with six rooms and a nurse's station in each corner. I was working in an adjacent corner unit during this time and had a nice view from my seat at the nurse's station of the empty unit. While charting, I noticed a man in that unit. He was tall and thin, wearing blue jeans, boots, and a nice button-down shirt. His hair was a yellow-gray, like he'd been smoking longer than I'd been alive, and it was brushed back over his head. He looked like an old truck driver. I immediately assumed he was a lost family member, so I hopped up and approached him to help him direct him on his way. He had a look of surprise on his face as I walked his direction, and he turned and walked past the corner where I couldn't see him. As I got to the corner, I saw him walk into room 12. I was about 30 feet from that room at this point, so I clearly saw him walk in there. But when I got to the room, he was gone. There are back doors to all of our rooms leading to a hallway, so the family can come and go as they please. The back door to the room never opened, and I would have heard it shut if it had. I checked the door anyway, but it was locked, and would have required a key to be opened from either side. I checked the bathroom, and still no one. If that unit had been open, I never would have known that I'd seen a ghost. He was that clear and visible to me. It is by far the most profound paranormal experience I have ever had.
And thank you for sharing that experience with us, George.
Yeah, hospitals.
Oh, man. It's
they're brutal.
They really are. Yeah. And I didn't really understand until our haunted healthcare episode how commonplace they were.
They are. And I think if you're like someone who works like either, you know, hospice, hospital, seniors, you know, living facility where death is a frequent visitor, I think you just sort of get used to it after a while.
I guess so, which I think is really super cool. I just, again, had no idea.
Yeah.
I will say, though, it's kind of a little bit in there twigged into something Jessica said in her story, is that it seemed like this cowboy guy looking guy in George's story kind of became aware that he was aware of him.
Yeah.
And then sort of made an exit.
Yeah.
And it's,
yeah,
it's sort of similar to Jessica's story about the girl in, or the woman in her room appearing surprised a little bit as though she had been noticed.
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure we had another story a couple episodes ago where a young girl said, oh, you can see me.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
And I'm just, I'm also fascinated by this. I think I've probably brought this up 1,000 times on the show, but the movie Tomorrowland with George Clooney.
Right.
It's about this sort of, they set up like a sideways society. And it's in like a parallel dimension almost.
Mm-hmm.
And so they kind of observe us from there.
Right.
And they're meant to be sort of a little bit more elevated than us, you know, a little bit more knowledgeable, a little bit more pure of intent. And I guess it is kind of comforting to think that someone's out there gently guiding us, although I don't know what the hell they've been doing the last little while. If they're asleep at the wheel, they all had a big ass party.
Christmas just, break.
Well, it's been going on for a while, guys. It's been a while. Come on, wake up. Help a guy out here.
That's funny.
So thanks again for those stories, George. And if you are, if you work in healthcare, you have a short story to share, please send it. ghoststoryguides@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Mm-hmm.
We would love to do another haunted healthcare episode.
Yeah, totally.
I know we've started, a listener sent in a book recommendation for, as a place to start.
First responders, right?
Another first responders episode. So
absolutely.
Or if you're a first responder, ghoststoryguys@gmail.com. We'd very much love to hear from you. I mean, we'd love to hear from anyone, but you know.
Oh, we got one this week from a correctional officer.
Of course,
and
yes.
And that totally counts. If you're putting your life on the line,
100%.
You're in that category. So, you know, it's not just limited to doctors and nurses and ambulance drivers.
Yes. This story comes from Tara. When my husband and I first moved to Salt Lake City, we rented a 100-year-old bungalow house. It was quite small with two adjoining bedrooms and one tiny bathroom upstairs and an unfinished basement. We were told that the family who owned it before our landlord lived in it many, many years and raised multiple generations of children there. The man of the house in particular was very proud of the roses growing out front. The landlord made it clear that this family had strong attachments to the property, and when the latest generation sold the house, they had to promise to care for the roses and keep the house as original as possible. The house had a feeling, as old houses often do. An unexplainable old energy permeated the place. One night, a few months after moving in, I awoke to a man standing in the doorway of my bedroom, just staring at me. He didn't move at all, and while I was scared, I assumed it was my eyes playing tricks on me in the darkness and shadows. I told my husband about it the next morning, and he agreed. Eye tricks. A week later, it happened again. I awoke to a man standing in the doorway. He didn't seem threatening or even too interested in me. Again, he just stood there. A few days after the second encounter, my husband and I were talking to a neighbor who knew the old family. Unsolicited, he told us that the man had died in the house, an apparently painful death from prostate cancer. I asked for the name and went home to Google the man. I found his obituary. It mentioned how he cared for his roses. It also included a photo, and as I zoomed in, I realized I was looking at the man in my bedroom. After that, I decided to let him be and ignore his presence. But I took special care of those roses for as long as we lived in the house, and they bloomed especially big after that. Thank you for sharing that, Tara.
Mm-hmm.
And I always love stuff like that where you've got the secondary verification.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And unbidden, too.
Yeah, that's it. And I'm sure a cynic would say, well, maybe she'd seen the picture before or something. Who cares? This is a bad show for cynics.
I love the roses that she stepped up and took care of them, too. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty great.
Yeah.
So thank you again.
Our next story is from Neil. In the early 2000s, I worked second shift on a naval base as a civilian IT contractor. My job entailed monitoring servers from 3 until 11 p.m. When I arrived at 3 p.m., the office was bustling with activity, but after about 5 in the evening, the building was pretty much empty. 3 days a week, I had a partner in crime, but the other 2 days, I was essentially alone. The building where I worked was built during World War II. It was constructed like a hangar, probably about 300 yards or more. At some point, it had been divided into 3 sections and converted into large cube farms with some offices and server rooms on the perimeter. One server room was small, about 8 feet wide and about 12 feet deep, and had servers on multi-tiered tables around the entire room. One of my end-of-shift duties was to change the web server backup tape, which was on a server in the far left back corner of that room. The server was on the back wall, and while attending to my duties, I was facing the far wall with my back towards the door. I noticed early on that when in that corner of the room, something just did not feel right. I always felt like I was not alone, like someone was always watching. After a few months, I awkwardly broached the subject with my coworker, and she said, "Oh, you noticed it too." I was a little relieved that it was not just me, but still felt kind of creeped out. One night, I was in the aforementioned server room, and the feeling was definitely amped up. I was feeling even more on edge than usual while changing the tape. I really felt like I needed to hurry up and get out of the room. Suddenly, out of the corner of my eye, I saw what looked like legs walking towards me up the aisle. They were wearing the navy white dress uniform. I could clearly see the shoes, pants with creases and stitching. They looked solid to the point where I quickly turned around and expected to see one of the naval officers in the room. Of course, there was nothing there. Needless to say, I finished as soon as possible and got the hell out of there, all while wondering if I'd just seen a ghost. Several years later, on one or another paranormal TV shows I was watching, they described the fear cage effect from having a small enclosed room with a strong EMF circling the entire room. I think this would be an apt description of the conditions for this encounter, so I began to wonder if this was the reason for what I saw that night. There are 2 reasons I'm not totally convinced it was just EMF. First, I only saw an apparition once and never again, despite being in there 5 nights a week. Second, why would I see Navy whites? I was not in the Navy, and the Naval Marine Corps officers I worked with either wore tan uniforms or digi-camo BDUs. I never saw any of them in their whites. I had one other strange thing happen while I worked there, but it did not involve the server room. One summer night, I was outside in the parking lot near the entrance to the building. The buildings were arranged in long rows, and this particular parking lot faced a warehouse-type building with 2 more identical buildings to the left and the right. The parking lots were well-lit, and not dark or foreboding in the least. I was stretching my legs out in the parking lot, getting some fresh air and reassurance the apocalypse had not yet taken place, since while in the building, you can't really tell if it's night or day, blizzard, raining fire, if the world had come to a sudden end. While walking back and forth across the length of the parking lot, I noticed a light hovering in the air. It was not an orb, but rather looked like a contracted diamond shape, points elongated on the top and bottom, but short on the sides. I thought it looked like the starlight from Star Trek THD when the Enterprise goes into warp. The light was about 5 feet tall and maybe 2 feet wide, point to point, and about 7 to 8 feet off the ground. It was moving slowly across the building. Now, normally, I would have thought it was some kind of reflection from the streetlight or other light source bouncing off something shiny, but what gave me particular pause was the distinct shadow it cast on the wall behind it as it moved. It moved from left to right on the wall, and then began to move upward until it faded and disappeared. As it moved across the wall, I'm not completely convinced this was paranormal. But if anyone knows what this is, or has an explanation, I would love to hear it.
Thank you, Neil. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea what it was.
Me neither. I've never heard of that.
No, I have heard of diamond shapes in the sky.
Okay.
Diamond-shaped light phenomenon, but no one has any answers.
No.
I mean, which I guess shouldn't be a surprise with any of this shit. You know, I think the moment one of us can come out concretely and say, oh, yeah, no, it was, that was the Fanulians out on a probe and run.
You know, what was interesting to me, the way he felt some nights were more intense than others. And you and I had that same experience when we were recording the old studio.
That's true.
Where some nights we'd be like, not a good night tonight. And we knew, and we would make great haste.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
To leave the building. So I get that. It's very tied in with the some nights are darker than others.
Yep.
That energy is very in flux and changing and sometimes far more intense than others.
I actually think it's a real gift to be able to differentiate, even if you just know that it is not a good time to be out.
Right.
I think it's a real gift because I think when you're out in that, I think that's when bad shit happens. And I don't necessarily just mean spooky stuff.
Yeah.
You know, because I think that translates to real world events.
Yes.
So I think those are the nights where you get jumped. Mm. Those are the nights you get beaten up. Those are the nights where you get into a car wreck.
Yeah. You know that something's off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
So I remember when I gave that talk at the high school, I told them that. I said, this isn't, you know, when I say if a night feels like you shouldn't go out, it doesn't mean necessarily that Sasquatch is coming.
Right.
It means that you could also get the shit beat out of you.
Well, and you can pick up on evil intent, right? Like sure. If someone's out looking for someone to do something horrible to, maybe that's what you're picking up.
Well, I won't say specifics because it refers to an actual legal case here. But there was a beating death that happened here in Victoria a few years ago. I was out that night. I was in a different part of town, not too far away from where it happened, before it happened. But I saw the person who was convicted of the crime sitting at a table with some other people. And I remember looking at that guy and thinking, he is going to hurt someone tonight.
Wow.
You could just tell.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, that kid's a bruiser.
Yeah.
That kid's going to hurt someone tonight.
Yeah.
And so when I saw in the news a couple days later that someone had been beaten and had died from their injuries, I wasn't surprised.
Well, we've had, you know, there's been a few murder cases where the victim has said to somebody else, oh, I'm supposed to go meet this person and I don't feel right about it, but...
Oh, yeah.
Right? It's always the but.
Yep.
So for God's sake, people, just pay attention to your instincts.
Just listen. This story comes from Paul. The first encounter was with a shadow figure during my early teen years. The first time I saw this figure was out hunting one fall up near what used to be the Blackfoot tribal land, where it was rumored was some of their holy sites. I knew of some medicine wheels, rock stick men figures, and other leftover relics from when they had once ruled the land, which I never bothered touched and relatively stayed away from to avoid any disturbances. On this specific fall day, I was walking in the woods where my dad and I have hunted for years. I saw a figure run over a hill, and thinking it was an elk, I followed, ignoring the chill at my neck, as this seemed to be the excitement of an approaching elk. As I got closer to where I saw the animal, I realized there were no signs of tracks or further sight of it, so I walked along the ridge to keep searching. After about another hour or so of walking, I saw it again run behind a thicket of jack pines, and so I went in after to find no animals, but an old First Nations burial site. This site was complete with a wooden platform in a tree with beaded decorations, feathers, and other bones and trinkets hanging off it. The platform was empty, but upon seeing it, I booked it off the ridge, down to my truck, and left. I went back the following week with more courage to find this site again, and could not. It was as though I had walked through a wormhole, saw a glimpse of the past the previous week, and left. After this, about 1 month later, on my way to school early in the morning sunlight, I saw the same shadow figure next to the road, This time I could clearly see it was human-shaped, completely grayish-black, wearing a hood and robes. I could not see its face, and since I was driving on the road, I quickly sped away to school. The same figure appeared to me 3 different times throughout my time in high school, along the same stretch of Highway 89 just north of Choteau, Montana. This was a spot on the road with nothing but grain fields for 10 miles in any direction, and no person should have been walking there, as there were no houses near this area either. During one other time, I saw the same figure along Highway 2 east of Shelby, Montana, during which instance I could make out what looked like a Native American man walking with the hood down alongside the road at 1 a.m. It was in an area of the road/state which no person should have been walking at this time of night. I did a double take, saw it in my mirror, and never looked back. This was the last time I saw that figure, and have never since. I've never haunted that area of the mountains by my house, nor have I visited it since. Better to respect the dead than to have them continuing to haunt me. This is Paul's second story. When I was a senior in high school, I would be driving home after late practice, as our school had one gym, and we had to split practice between 3 sports and 3 times a day, which meant driving home a lot around 11 p.m. I never minded this, as the road was empty and I could cruise home peacefully, at least until after a few weeks of practice, when I started seeing a blinking light low on the horizon in my rearview. It was there if I turned my head and saw it as well. Now, I grew up in farm country and drove this same 30-mile stretch of Highway 89 for 11 years going to and from school, every weekend going into town for sports, events, and shopping, as this was the one way in and out of town. I had become very aware of all the lights, trees, rocks, turns, twists on this road so that I could literally, and I believe I had a few times, driven it in my sleep. This light was in a space where no man-made structure should have been, and knowing this, it was just enough to get my anxiety up, but did not think anything of it as it was just a blinking light. I became more aware of the curious nature when the light went from being behind me to traveling on the right side of my car. This section of road is 11 miles arrow straight and flat for 40 miles on either side. This light stayed a small distance away but paced me evenly as I drove along at 70 miles an hour. I got to the curves at the end of this section of road and the light moved back behind me, always seeming to be the same distance from my car regardless of position. I got home and a bit anxious put it out of my mind just as my being tired and seeing sprinkler pivot lights or distant headlights or something. But this explanation didn't hold up when the light kept visiting me over the next 5 months, 2 to 3 times a week when I would be driving home after late practice. Finally, I had to get some help, so I asked my best friend to go for a drive with me after practice one night. All I said was I wanted him to see something. Like clockwork, as I approached the 11-mile straight stretch of Highway 89, the light showed up and did its usual dance, which completely freaked my friend out, and he became very animated. After about another month of this happening to me, I finally stopped my car along the road, upon which point the light stopped. Thankful, I drove off and the light appeared and would disappear as I stopped and drove again several times scared and furious. Finally, I got out of my car and began screaming at the light to leave me alone, quit following me, and that I was tired of this. I had chills go up through my whole body as a wave of energy hit me after I had finished yelling. I heard scurrying footsteps run off into the wheat field, and the light was gone. I continued on my drive, thankful it was done. After that, I saw the light 2 more times and then never again since. I still go back and try to drive that section of road around 11 to 11:30 p.m. to see if it is back and nothing has appeared. Whatever it was seemed to have some form of consciousness as it could move and stop with me, and then went away. And one last thing, Paul shared a third story about a family member coming back to check on him.
Right.
But we are going to hold that because we're going to do a whole episode on that topic.
Oh, we're going to do another passing over kind of thing?
Yeah, more like not quite a passing over, I guess a passing over, but it doesn't necessarily have to be about the moment they passed.
Okay.
Just a moment where they came back and offered some guidance or in some way reached out after they had passed.
Nice.
Yeah. So thanks for sharing those with us, Paul. And the light thing, it's fascinating to me because at first, I'll be honest, and Paul, please don't take this the wrong way, I actually thought it was maybe just a reflection from the car.
Right.
You know, because it stopped every time he stopped and things like this. But the footsteps running into the bush, that does unnerve me.
Yes. And it's funny because I've heard a few stories, especially on the prairies, of lights,
Oh, really?
Yeah, ghost lights are pretty common, especially in Saskatchewan and places like that. I don't know why those are more common. I guess because you can see them easier.
Makes sense.
But the scurrying footsteps? Urf.
Yeah, right?
Not cool.
No, Mr. Tumnus buggering off into the undergrowth. This is not on.
No. And that's the thing. You're out there exposed. And if you've spent, like I grew up on the prairies, and when you're out there in the middle of the night, one of the, this sounds so insane. A friend of mine who has since passed on, not because of this, we would drive her car out into the middle of the prairies at, 2 o'clock in the morning, and we would turn off all the lights and keep driving.
Oh, you guys, I think, was it Rolling Ghost? Is that what they
call it? I don't even know what we were doing, but we would turn off all the lights, we would put the windows down, and we would just drive in complete darkness. And it was bright enough you could see the road.
Sure.
But you certainly felt very, very small.
I bet.
In the grand scheme of things. So, I don't know, lights in the prairies, there's just something going on there.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
And just briefly before we move on the subject of these shadows, I just wanted, again, to mention, I think it's cool that Paul found something like what he did and left it the hell alone.
Yes.
And I know some
more people need to do that.
Yes. Do you want haunting?
Yeah.
That's how you get haunted. You find shit out in the woods, you leave it out there.
Yeah, true.
Like, this is how you get trouble.
Well, even, I mean, I know of a story of a brick factory, and the guy took a brick and then was tormented. His family was tormented until his little brother finally confessed what he'd done, because it was actually his little brother who'd stolen the brick.
Right.
And they took it back, and then whatever it was left them alone.
That's a Sydney Brickworks, right?
Yes, that's it. That's exactly.
Yeah. No, don't. Just don't. It's like when you, when you're on a historic site or something. Actually, Uluru in Australia is apparently infamous for that. If you take a rock, apparently, it is extremely bad luck.
Oh, no.
And I guess it is not uncommon for the Park Service or whatever the Australian equivalent of that is to receive stones back
in the mail.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Like,
sorry, guys. I was stupid and I took this and now, I'm suffering.
Oh, wow.
And I'm sure it could, again, maybe it's unconnected.
Yeah.
But don't do it.
No.
It's just bad.
It's just bad. Just leave it alone. Yes. It's not yours. Leave it alone.
And also, I just, my heart goes out to everyone in Australia. I know we have a lot of listeners there.
Breaks my heart.
And it's unspeakably bad. I'm not even going to try and put any other kind of descriptor on it than that. But just, guys, we're out there. We know you're out there.
Yeah.
And we just wish you the best, and we hope you're okay.
100%.
Jesus. It's a bad, bad, bad scene. And I hope that it is a problem we can try to address soon.
Yeah, for
because
sure.
Because Jesus Christ.
No country should go through that. No continent should go through that.
No, not at all.
Our next story is from Savannah. My name's Savannah. I'm a 20-year-old student in Bellingham, Washington, and heard about your podcast on campus, probably because of close proximity to Vancouver. I have many ghost stories from throughout my life, possibly too many to include in this email. I'm from Spokane, Washington, somewhere the two of you have both mentioned on the podcast. It's a town with an interesting energy, with many secrets and creepy vibes. The supernatural has always interested me, probably due to my experiences with sleep paralysis at a young age. My father has told me a story in which a ghost, or my suspicion sleep paralysis, ripped my sleeping infant body off of his chest while pushing on his sternum, making him unable to breathe after falling asleep in the basement of the first home him and my mom owned together. He has no idea what it could be, but it's something he's told me over and over again and is uncomfortable with. My parents split up, and I've had experiences at all of their houses, which makes me fear that possibly this woman or other spirits are following me. The period with the most activity is when I lived in a ranch-style home with my dad, his wife, her son, and my brother. The house had a finished basement, and the setup of the house was incredibly long. The kitchen and upstairs, as well as the basement, were all incredibly elongated. The basement hallway always had a horrible feeling to it for me. If you stood at the opposite end of the corridor and looked down the hallway, it was so dark you couldn't see the end if none of the lights were on. To make all of my stories short, my father and I shared a hallway upstairs, which meant when we would hear peculiar noises in the night, we would both end up peeking our heads out and meeting each other in the hallway in concern and confusion. We woke up to all of the numerous cupboards and cabinets and doors in the kitchen flung open, and random objects pulled out and placed on the counters and the floor. I shared a room with windows facing the backyard in which I would wake up to noises, sounding like a small child or an animal trapped under the cover of the pool, in which I would jolt awake in fear one of my brothers were drowning or one of our dogs. I'd enter the back porch and see the pool completely sealed and still, with no sign of movement. We had a few break-ins one winter, one of which I was home for, so my dad ended up setting up multiple cameras all over the house and put a nanny cam in my stepbrother's room. He had caught a figure following my brother down the stairs to the basement at one point, and another figure opening my stepbrother's door, letting the light from the bathroom, a form of a nightlight so either of my brothers weren't too scared of sleeping in the basement, flood into his room, and where the door stays open for a few minutes and then slams shut, waking my brother up, all of which was caught on camera. My brother told me on multiple occasions that he would wake up to a woman in the far corner of his room, opening the door, looking at him, and slowly opening the door and leaving his room backwards, maintaining eye contact until she would slink into the hallway and stare at him through the crack she would leave in the door for him. He would wake up the next morning and his door would be shut tight. I would wake up to knocks and tapping on my mirror closet doors, as well as the occasional taps on the end of my bed. One night I woke up to my bed violently knocked into the wall, rolling backwards and forwards uncontrollably. The owner's husband had died in my room, which terrified me, but I never saw him. I sensed him, I think, but he was never scary. He just made me uncomfortable. I would run to and from my room through the rest of the house. I never felt safe. My dad doesn't remember a lot of the torment I encountered, but we talk about it to this day. There was also a back room, a billiard room connected to our basement living room. This room gave me a horrible feeling and also led to the dreaded hallway. I have other stories about this house if you're interested, but I fear my submission is already too long. I hope you enjoy these shortened stories. I have so many more.
We sure enjoyed them, Smana, so thank you very much.
And yeah.
If you have more, feel free to send them in.
Absolutely. No stories are too long.
No. And it's funny she says that Spokane is a haunted place because this explains a lot. I am so hooked into Spokane.
Really?
Yeah. I have driven through there. I've been through there a handful of times in my life. And I remember every time, as soon as I'm on the freeway going through and I start to see, because I think some of the buildings are kind of a brownish brick.
Right.
I just feel immediately like I want to stay and look.
Ooh.
And I remember a couple years ago when we went, or I guess 8 years ago now, when we went to the Harvest Combine Demolition Derby, we stayed in not far from Spokane. But we drove around afterwards and I just wanted to stay and look and take pictures and... And I only ever get that when a place has got mojo, so I guess that makes sense.
It's funny you say that, because I went to Spokane for the first time ever this year.
First time, really?
Or 2019 was my first time, yeah.
Wow.
And I was blown away by it. There's so much history there.
Yeah.
It's a really pretty town, and there is something about it that I agree with you. There's some kind of weird energy about it. I don't know if it's the topography or the buildings or what, but there is absolutely something about that place. I think some powerful energy runs through there, and perhaps some of the ghosts are hanging around because they can tap into that energy. I don't know what it is, but yeah, I get it.
I mean, that does seem to be what Savannah's experiencing in that house.
100%, yeah.
Because, yeah, those are chilling stories. Thank you again for sharing them. This next story comes from Andrew T. My name is Andrew, and I'm from El Paso, Texas. This story takes place a few years back when I was a security guard for an auction lot. I worked 4 p.m. to 12 a.m. 4 days of the week, and 12 p.m. to 8 a.m. on my fifth day. I'm the only person there overnight. Yes, the schedule sucked. It screwed around my sleeping schedule. At this lot, we get cars from repos to rentals or trade-ins at dealerships, a few that were nasty with maggots. I've seen it, and it's bad. We had cars that were involved in suicides or shootings that are riddled with bullet holes, and some had been involved in fatal accidents with people's hair still embedded in the windshield. It's rare, but I've had a few come in during my time being there. On one of my overnight shifts, I was doing my rounds and happened to be in one of the lots across the street from the main lot when I spotted, about halfway down a line of 20 cars, a Mini Cooper running. So I did the usual thing you do, which is you open the door, you turn the car off, and you leave the keys in the console. Well, just as I had done that, the headlights of the car behind me turned on. So I jumped and looked at the car. There was no one in it. And it made sense there wouldn't be, because to get into the lot, there's a large fence you have to move, and I would have heard someone move it. So I slowly approached the car, and I saw that the keys were in the ignition, but only turned on enough to engage the battery, not the engine. The really weird thing is that in order to turn on those lights, you have to pull a knob. So that was it for me. I said, fuck that shit, and that was it for my patrol for the night. Ever since then, I don't do my patrols on that lot overnight, and when I do go on patrol, I use a company truck and speed through it so I can get back to my security shed. Can't say I blame you. The second thing I had happened was during my 4-day week. I worked until midnight, the business was closed, and I was the only one there after 7 p.m. Well, there was a light in the attic of the auction garage that would turn on all by itself. Now, to get to that attic, you need a key to get into a storage room with stairs leading up to a door that has a metal mesh door that needs a different key, and then a third key for a main door. Now, I have keys for every door on the property except the two keys you need to get into the attic. I asked one of my managers if they had keys for it, and they said no, it's been locked since they've been renting there. That was unsettling to me. Now, here's the kicker. In the garage bay, if you look up against the wall on the side where the attic stairs are, you can see a hole where the light shines through, and I worried that one day I'm going to see something pass by. Well, one night while on patrol, I got the feeling of being watched, and my fear came true. Very quickly, something passed by the hole that was no more than 1 foot wide. I stopped, turned around, headed back to my shed, and I did not leave for 4 hours. I stayed until the end of my shift when the next guard came, and when he asked what my night was, I said, good, and I headed home, and I didn't mention anything to any of the night shift guys. But I'm pretty sure they figured out something was off, because we went through a few guys in only 2 months. Now, that light wasn't always on, but every time it was on, I would get the most uncomfortable feeling when I saw it, and I just turned around and headed the opposite way, never looking back. Thank you for sharing those with us, Andrew. I would not want to be a security guard in that place.
You know, and it's funny, I can absolutely picture what he's talking about. When part of my job with the police department, we take our summer students for training, and we have a big thing we do with them on texting and driving and drinking and driving and speed and all those dangerous things. So we take them to a wrecking yard, and this is the place where cars get taken when they just can't be driven anymore.
Oh, okay.
For different reasons, but 99% of the reasons are accidents, some of which are fatal. And I've had that uncomfortable feeling where I've gone there and seen cars that I recognize from the news.
Oh, man.
But the interesting thing is those cars, I don't know how to describe it. They give off an energy. Like, you know something bad has happened with this car.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's really strong. So when he's talking about that and how some of the cars just seem to be running or, yeah, I get it. I think people attach themselves to cars a lot more than we realize.
Yeah. Well, you think about how much time you spend in there too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Yeah. And I kind of wonder, you know, there's all these stories, of course, about the actor, what's his name?
James Dean.
James Dean, who died in his poor Spider.
Yeah.
And how parts of it, allegedly, ended up in other cars and bad things happened in those cars.
Sure.
And now, of course, I don't know if that's true or not, but I have heard other stories about, say, haunted items being disassembled and used in other things, which then have their own set of issues.
Well, there's a story about the plane crash, the plane that...
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I was wondering, I couldn't remember if I'd just invented that in my head.
No, Barbara actually wrote a whole story on it.
Oh, okay, there we
go.
Yeah,
yeah. It crashed in the Florida Everglades. Fairly new plane, but there were significant fatalities, and so they salvaged a bunch of the parts from that plane, put them into other planes in the fleet,
right?
Ended up having to remove those parts because the flight crew and even passengers were complaining about the weird sort of ghostly things that were going on the planes. Yeah,
as if being in the air is not bad enough.
Yeah, right. And for some, they didn't even know those pieces had come from the downed planes. So when they started talking about it and the stories became more consistent, the airline just realized it was easier just to pull the parts.
Wow.
Yeah.
So in the case of these junkyards, I wonder if what happens is they're just bought by people who don't know any different.
Yeah.
Or if people buy things and then don't know why they feel odd.
Yeah. For a lot of those cars, I mean, obviously not like the burned ones and things like
sure,
that.
Right.
But ones with enough damage to make them undrivable but still salvageable, they do get bought by auto brokers.
Right.
Who will then repair them and will then sell them.
Wow.
Yeah.
So they're
so you don't always know what you're getting. Yeah.
I bought a used car. Good to know.
Our next story is from Carl. You guys are my first ever podcast listen now that I have a new job and I'm out on the roads a lot more. Oh, well, that's nice. I thought I would expand beyond listening to the conventional radio. Always a good plan, Carl. When I was listening to your Ghosts in the Machine episode and getting more and more sucked in as I was listening, I had a bit of a moment. As you were recounting the story of the mobile phone being found up high on the shelf, my own mobile phone that was laying on the passenger seat chirped up, and Siri had opened. Across the screen it read, "Are you there?" I had to stop the car, so surprised and properly freaked out by this time. So I listened back a couple of times over the same passage to see if something had triggered Siri to be listening, but it never did. Wow. There are a couple of other stories you might like. My house near Norwich, England, was built in 1930s in a small village. My son's bedroom has always been a little, quote-unquote, noisier than the others for some reason. There's been two notable events, both when he was less than 4 years old. Late one evening, he woke and called me. As I entered the room, he told me very quietly that he is finding it hard to sleep. When I asked why, he whispered, "It's because all the doors keep going open, shut, open, shut, open, shut." It was a very spooky moment. At a similar time, we had friends coming around one evening around 8 p.m. When they came into our house, unprompted, our friend Lizzie said, "Wow, your son's having a late night. I thought he would be in bed." She'd seen a small boy up at the window and exchanged a wave with him while walking up the drive. I'd put him into bed at 7 p.m., and when I went to double-check, he was still fast asleep and zoned out, wrapped up in blankets. Scary stuff.
Yikes.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, there's one thing to live in a haunted house, another thing when your kid's bedroom is having freaky things happen.
I mean, yeah, that's, I mean, I don't have kids, so I don't care. But I'm kidding. But, I mean, I don't have kids, but I do care. That would freak me right the shit out.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I understand you want to protect them.
Yeah, and there's nothing you can do.
No, that's it.
No.
No, that is crazy. And the phone thing is interesting. I mean, I tend to sort of just kind of think Siri does things sometimes. But we have had a lot of people write in and say that various things on our show have tripped their personal digital assistants, whatever they are. I'm not going to say the names because that'd be dickish because your phones will then factor on. There was one podcast I was listening to where they did that. They thought it would be really funny to say all the things, and one of them tripped my phone, and I thought, come on, guys.
That's annoying.
It's super annoying.
Yeah.
Especially when you're driving because you can't fix it.
No.
But that is fascinating. And let us know what happens with your house, Carl. If it keeps up, I'd be curious to know because that is unnerving. Finally, our last story tonight comes from Matt. Matt says, "Okay, so when I was about 12, around 2002 to 2004, I was placed into the Admiral Farragut Academy, which is in St. Pete, about an hour away from my house. First, the layout of the dormitory. It's a square, three-story building with a huge courtyard in the middle. In the middle of one of the sides, it expands out and includes an old World War II ballroom, which is no longer in use. This is where everything I know takes place. And this is the first time I ever had a paranormal experience. With it being a military program, we had a watch, which we would be paired up with another cadet, and basically walk around the perimeter for 4 hours a night. So, the first few nights, there was nothing that exciting happening, although there were whispers from the other cadets about weird happenings in the night. I never thought anything of it at the time, because paranormal things terrified me. The first night I was on watch, I was sitting at our desk, and my partner was doing rounds. He'd been gone for maybe 5 minutes when he came back, white as a sheet, and said there was music playing near the ballroom. I thought he was kidding, but he insisted I go with him to check it out, so I followed, and sure enough, I started hearing swing music. Very lightly, but it was there. When I glanced at the one viewpoint from which you could actually see the dance floor, I saw shadows gliding across it. It was insane. Scared the shit out of me. I quickly walked back to my partner and without saying a word, grabbed him by the sleeve, and we both speedily went back to our post and never went back there that night. Now I move forward to our next night. I was on watch again at a different time. I was minding my own business when all of a sudden one of the cadets started screaming. I went running down to the room, and when I crossed the threshold, it was so cold I thought I'd walked into a freezer. When I asked the kid that was screaming what happened, he had no idea, except he'd suddenly woken up screaming and freezing. It was still freezing the next day. Remember, this is Florida in the summer, and this building had next to no AC in it, so the hallway was swelteringly hot, but the room was ice cold. The third thing happened the next day while we were on a cleaning detail on the first floor. We had briefly stopped cleaning and were goofing off, as preteens do, playing with the brooms, swinging them around like we were practicing rifle drills, which was not weird because we'd been doing that with practice rifles on and off during the week. When all of a sudden one of the guys banged the end of the broom on the ground a few times, and we audibly heard someone or something bang back from under the ground. There was no basement or anything underneath us. There couldn't be, because we were right next to the water. Needless to say, we were scared and quickly finished our cleaning, trying to ignore what had just happened. The last thing that happened there was towards the end of my stay. Down the hallway where we were staying on the second floor, there were a bunch of dorm rooms, probably about 30 in all, and each one had a window that was barred so it couldn't be open. Well, one of the windows in the next room over suddenly had the window yanked open for no reason. Both me and the guy whose room it was watched it happen, which terrified us. I ran out to get one of the leaders, and when I came back with one, the window was closed. When I asked my roommate what happened, he simply said that as soon as I ran out of the room, it just closed nonchalantly, like nothing had happened. So yeah, that's what happened to me at Admiral Farragut Academy. I honestly don't know if it's truly haunted or not, I just know the next time I went there a few years later as a leader, I felt an extreme evil at the gate. I remembered everything that happened the last time I was there. I prayed for protection of myself and all my cadets, and we had a very peaceful time there, where everyone else had random happenings that entire visit. So thank you for sharing that, Matt.
Yeah, wow.
And before we talk about the actual story, I wanted to say there was a real coincidence with Matt, because when he wrote to us originally in October, he mentioned that on episode 38, you and I had talked about Frank Peretti,
right,
who is the author of the novel This Present Darkness,
right,
which which is what we named this episode. Well, apparently, Matt's middle name comes from the captain of the heavenly hosts from that book.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And when I had chosen Matt's story for this particular episode, I didn't know that. So I had named the episode This Present Darkness because of Jessica's email.
Right.
And then just as I was finishing up the script and adding Matt's story, I saw his email about This Present Darkness and realized the coincidence.
That is so weird.
It's just a very, very random thing.
Yeah, that's cool.
It is. So thank you for sharing that with us, Matt. And the whole something pounding back from the ground, that shit bothers me.
Yeah, never cool.
Man, that is some scary Tommyknocker stuff.
Yeah, no, I don't want anything knocking back anywhere.
And I would be really interested to know about persistent haunting on military bases. I know we've heard some, but the reason I say this is because I'm so curious about the power of repeated ritual.
Mm.
And if there's any more ritualistic place outside of an actual religion, I it would be the military.
Yeah, very true.
You know, because everything, and when I say ritual, I'm not referring to something satanic. Just
No. Yeah.
You know, I understand. This is not, I'm not questioning the military or
no.
accusing them of anything unsavory. I just mean the power of repeated actions.
And tradition.
The power of repeated
schools,
actions.
Schools, military, religion.
Yeah. And there's so much like pure belief there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I just wonder if there is some kind of correlation or connection between energy and those repeated rituals.
Interesting.
Yeah. So again, if anyone else has stories from military bases, we've had a few from listeners now, and I know we have some listeners in the armed forces. If you do have any of these stories, we'd love to hear them.
Absolutely.
GhostStoryGuys@gmail.com. And just generally, if you have a story you want to share, GhostStoryGuys@gmail.com. We're going to share them on probably upcoming episodes. We can't always guarantee your letter is going to get on the air. And we do condense them, just so you know. We will sometimes condense them just in order to fit better with other stories. We'll never alter what happened.
No.
Never. And we'll never significantly change it. It's just, again, a matter of, what do they say? These edited for length and clarity.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't mind. We love reading it.
It's absolutely.
Just in terms of making it into entertainment.
Yeah.
We got to condense it a little bit. But thank you to everyone who wrote in and shared your experiences with us.
Always.
It means the world to us. Again, hopefully other people out there can connect and say, oh, that happened to me. Or I know those diamond-shaped lights. Or I've had the three people reach out to me. In fact, actually, we've talked about this. We've had listeners.
Yes.
Who've had that experience.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Again, thanks to everyone. GhostStoryGuys@gmail.com if you have your own stories. And we'll take a quick little break and come back with our patron shoutouts and listener mail. midnight. Welcome back. Thanks, as always, to the rest of the team, Anthony Germain, Luke Greensmith, and Sarah Kent for their help on this and every episode. Those guys have been invaluable, and they continue to be so. So thank you all very much. First up, we have our patron shoutouts. Of course, we'd like to thank all our patrons, but we would especially like to thank our most recent patrons. They are
Leslie Devlin,
Jenna Blackwelder,
Alma Flores,
Grace Rooney,
Lindsay Fisher,
Billy Joe House,
Aaron Clegg,
Aaron and Jerry,
Colin Gately,
Jane Leake,
Elizabeth Lang,
Rebecca Clotier,
Aaron Lawrence,
Christine JLW,
Leslie,
and Jules Norcross. Thank you so much, everyone.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it just means the world. Especially, we lost a lot of people over Christmas.
Which makes sense.
Oh, yeah. We expected that happens every year, and it happens, man. Your credit card gets maxed out. You can't, no. Mine did too, so don't worry about it. But thank you to everyone who contributes. It means the world to us, past and present. Whether you've been able to contribute and then now can't, that's totally cool. Or don't want to, that's fine too. We appreciated the support when we had it. It just helps us. Well, right now it's helping me pay my bills because I'm still waiting to start my other position.
It's true.
But it just, yeah, it means a lot. Thank you so much. If you want to join the team, head on over to patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. That's patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. We have tiers at the $1, $5, $10, $20, and $50 levels. Gets you access to everything from exclusive stickers designed by Canadian artist Wanda Fraser to our monthly Cabin Fever episodes where Ian talk about all the stuff we've been doing that just doesn't fit into the main show anymore. Food we've been eating, movies we've been watching, just kind of a extra 45-minute to an hour-long hangout session that, the public doesn't get. You also get access to the monthly Luke Lore Show, which is Luke's deep dive into a folklore topic of his choosing. And you get access to our monthly live shows, which, again, just an opportunity for us to interact with you. It's a live video stream. Well, I don't know why you'd want to look at us, but you can.
You can ask us questions.
Ask us questions, again.
Like, why do you do this? Why do you look like that? Why don't you just stop and die already?
All right, well, Ian needs a nap. Yes, and there's so much, much more. Head on over to patreon.com/ghoststoryguys to find out. Next up, we have listener mail.
Our courteous and efficient staff is on call 24 hours a day to serve all your supernatural elimination needs.
We're ready to believe you.
Thank you to everyone who reaches out. We love hearing your stories, your comments, your questions, your gentle criticisms.
The only kind you can take.
That's so true. So true. Otherwise, I end up at your house with a knife in my teeth.
Snarling and biting.
Yeah, it's true. It's a temper problem. I'm not medicated. I probably should be.
Yeah, and shots for distemper.
Yeah. So this time around, we'd like to thank everyone who reached out, and they are
Shadrach,
Allison,
Alexandra,
Arwen,
Mythica,
Devin,
Chris,
Ariel,
Abraham,
Mark,
Kesley,
Selena,
Rin,
Bob,
Mara,
Joe,
Anna,
Jennifer,
Jane,
Bree,
Deborah,
Caitlin,
Andrew,
Elizabeth,
Melissa,
Catherine,
Teresa,
and Cheeky, who also sent a follow-up Instagram message apologizing for the length of her email, which you totally don't have to do.
No, you really don't.
We love long messages.
Yeah.
We are here for it. Reading is what do we do? We're not good at much in this world, but we're good at that. So thank you so much for reaching out, guys. Again, if you want to get a hold of us, ghoststoryguys@gmail.com is a way to do it for your stories, comments, questions, and general criticisms. You can also find us on Instagram at instagram.com/theghoststoryguys. Sarah runs our Twitter account at twitter.com/ghoststoryguys. Make sure to follow us over there and say hello to her. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/ghoststoryguys. And I believe, would you like to push your personal Instagram in?
Sure, it's super easy to find.
Oh, what is it?
Ghost Story Guy.
Oh, that was hard. And I'm also at Largely the Truth. And
because you're truthful and large?
Yeah, no, it's because I largely tell the truth.
Oh, like it.
Classy. So yeah, we're pretty easy to find, but if you do have a story, please send it to theghoststoryguys@gmail.com. But again, thanks everyone for getting in touch, and we look forward to hearing from everyone else. And we were going to announce a couple new things on the show, but my voice is beat to shit, so and it started that way.
Yeah.
So we're going to wait till the next episode to do that.
Good call.
But it's just a couple of fun little things that we're going to be working on for the new year, and Well, some of them aren't even ready yet because I lost a week of prep to this goddamn flu.
Exactly.
So yeah, we will save the big stuff for next episode. You and I are going to be on Paul Bestel's Mysteries and Monsters podcast.
Damn straight we are.
Yes, so that is booked. I don't know when the episode will drop, but...
We don't care about that. We just care about getting booked to do it.
Yeah, and we have to be nice now because Paul is actually on the UK radio.
Oh.
So we can't... I say we. It's
mostly you, let's be honest. You are the problem.
Yeah, I can't go around willy-nilly.
You've always been the problem.
0% surprise. Yeah, no more willy-nilly dropping F-bombs for me on Paul's show. It's fun, excitement. Listen to the first time we did it, and legitimately, I'm the only one swearing, and I'm just throwing them off left and right, like I'm Andrew Dice Clay.
Like a chef in a Denny's kitchen.
Oh, it's terrible. But yes, that is it for upcoming events for now, but next episode we'll have some cool shit to talk about.
Excellent.
Huge thank you to our new composer, Kevin J. Eustace, host of the podcast We Need to Talk About Ghosts, and incredibly talented musician. Make sure to check out Kevin on SoundCloud, Spotify, wherever you stream your music. He's on iTunes. Pick up one or two of his records. He's a very, very talented singer-songwriter. And as you can tell by, if you know Kevin's, his albums, any of his stuff, or if you listen to his show, you know the music he typically plays is nothing like what he made for us this time, which shows his incredible versatility.
Yeah.
And so I look forward to seeing what else he comes up with. I hope he sticks with us because, damn, that's exciting. You can find a link to his profiles via the show notes for this episode. If you want to pick up some Ghost Story Guys merch, head on over to ghoststoryguys.redbubble.com. There you can pick up pretty much whatever your evil heart desires. We have so many designs, some by Vancouver Island artist Wanda Fraser, some by LA artist Bob Vasquez, and then our classic logo designs as well. Some gorgeous stuff. And if you do buy anything from our store, make sure to forward us your receipt and I'll send you a couple stickers as a thank you. Also, if you want to pick up signed copies of our books, head on over to our Big Cartel store at ghoststoryguys.bigcartel.com. And they're actually a pretty good deal if you're down in the States because we charge Canadian prices in that store. So you save about 30% on the exchange. And the shipping isn't that much more. Again, that's ghoststoryguys.bigcartel.com if you want to pick up some books. We also sell postcards and pins through there as well. Don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes. It helps get eyes on the show, and we love just seeing what you have to say, even if it's not all flattering, which sometimes it's sometimes it's not. We do like knowing what the temperature is out there, and we appreciate it. Our theme song, Radio, Into the Darkness We Go, is composed and performed by Peter of Pedzanta Music. You can find him online at soundcloud.com/therealpedzantamusic. Our story's theme, The Future Belongs to Them Now, is composed and performed by Hexagram. You can find more from them at hexagram.bandcamp.com. That's Hexagram with two X's, not three. Or on Spotify and everywhere else you stream your music. And I encourage you to check them out. Hexagram's a great band. All other music and sound effects on this episode are provided courtesy of Epidemic Sound. If you're looking for pod-safe music and sound effects for your next project, head on over to epidemicsound.com and check them out. I guess that's going to do it.
Yeah, I think so.
We'll be back in 2 weeks with another show and hopefully less shredded voices.
Oh, please.
Well, you actually sound pretty good.
Well, I'm holding back a cop, trust me.
Oh, fair, okay. Yeah. So, we will be back then, and until then...
Into the darkness we go.
And that's all the news that's fit to print.
That's right.
This man disowned dad.
Oh my God. Psychologically damaging and potentially litigious.
Yep. Too.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, it was just Ian breaking into my house again to steal my underwear.
As you do.
You got to stop doing that. That's how you got sick.
Yeah, probably. One of the saddest days of my life was I took my gigantic CD collection into the music store to see what I could get for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they only wanted to buy two of the CDs, and I think I got $10.
I'm surprised you got that.
It was heartbreaking.
And go.
I can't.
Oh, fuck. Oh, he's such a diva. Have you able to read this? If you want my
Stop
mind.
It. No, no one does.
And fuck you.
No, that's my point.